Hello, and welcome back to Better with Becky, a show for anyone on the journey to a stronger self and a better life. My name is Becky Searles. It rhymes with pearls. Just take that P off, replace it with an S. And I'm your host. That's how I started every first day of school. Back when I was a teacher, by the way, I would just write pearls on the board, then cross off the P and write an S. And then I'd have the kids say pearls, pearls, Searles, Searles. And it was just the easiest way to ensure I wasn't called like Mrs. Searles for a whole school year. So you're welcome. If ever you share my last name, that's a tip you can use. Or you can just remember that's my name, or you can just remember Becky and that things are typically better with me, or so I like to think. I have a business called Better with Becky. Under the umbrella of that business, I have a strength training program called Build with Becky, where I teach you to get strong inside and out. And I like to think I do that in a slightly better way than most things that I see on the interwebs these days. It's a very evidence-based program. It folds in progressive overload and all the major movement patterns. You learn to squat, hinge, push, and pull, and do a little bit more work week over week to get a little stronger with plenty of grace folded in to make it nice and sustainable. But anyway, you can find all that on my website, www.betterwithbecky.com, if that's something you're looking for. But in the meantime, I thought it was about time to settle in for a little catch-up sesh, just like I would with a friend on Marco Polo. It's been a few weeks. And just kind of fill you in on what's been going on in my life over the course of that time. So I believe last time I podcasted, it was probably around my birthday or right after, because that episode, which you can go take a peek at, I'll link to it in the show notes, was called Birthdays with Becky. And I talked all about kind of updating beliefs around birthdays and practices if need be, if you, like me, might at times not have the easiest time around your birthday. So if that's something that sounds interesting, go check that episode out. But now fast forward maybe 5-6 weeks, and here we are somehow at the end of March, which is wild. I still feel like it's February, but it's going to be April 1st, and that is not a joke. In a couple of days, we are facing a new month on Wednesday. I don't know how that happened, but I think the reason it feels that way to me is that after the very quick month of February, which is always so fast, let's be honest, because of the leap year and everything, it's when it's not a leap year, it's just a short little month with 28 days. So then we were into March before you knew it. And then I went to Columbus, Ohio, trying to remember when that was. I believe it was the first weekend of March for the Arnold Classic, which is a big bodybuilding competition and like a broader just fitness expo. So that was really fun, an opportunity to go see a couple of friends and BWB clients, Katie and Heather, and catch up with them, get a lift in together, spend some quality time. But also I got to attend a bodybuilding show in person for the first time, see what that felt like. And in particular, I got to see the amateurs and I got to see the new fit model division, which is the division that I'm training for. So that was really neat just to see what it looks like and to see what the judges were prioritizing and just to also get a vibe for what the stage felt like, what the environment was like, whether or not I might want to do that someday. So that was the first weekend. And then that actually led into, this is why March felt fast, that I forgot, but this was even before all the current TSA craziness. My flight back got delayed, 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 and then canceled. And I believe I was supposed to fly home on like Sunday the 8th, but because my flight got canceled and because Justin and I needed to be in Miami, I believe on the 11th for, long story, but we had to go to the consulate for an interview for a visa in Japan. I'll talk more about that later, maybe. Otherwise, possibly I'll link to something in the show notes in case you're wondering what the Japan thing's all about. But we had to be there like 2 days later, and I was already flying home the next day. So I figured, why don't we not fly to Orlando? Let's just fly to Miami area. So I actually flew to Fort Lauderdale, which is a hop, skip, and a jump away from Miami. Got to see a friend there, got to go to a fun gym, then Ubered on down to Miami, met up with Justin. We did our visa thing and came back the end of that second week of March. So really since then, the last 2 weeks have just been like, one, you know how you always need a week to like recover from a week away? That was the first week. And then last week, I really, after getting the next Build with Becky program out, which started last Sunday, I believe it dropped. So we're about a week in. For people that are familiar with the program, I call that first week Baby Giraffe Week. So people have just kind of been feeling their way into the new program. This one focuses on hip thrusts and overhead pressing, but you always have lots of options and flexibility. But that Baby Giraffe Week is just kind of, you're wobbling around, you're finding your way in the gym, you're figuring out what you like best and where you like to do it, with what equipment, what maybe a 6 out of 10 effort level feels like, so that then you can build on that in the future weeks. So that's kind of where we're at with the new program. And then I really had to turn my attention to starting to design a conference talk that I'll be giving in a couple weeks to about a month now. A couple weeks, my slides are due, then a couple weeks after that, I present. And this is a conference for personal trainers. My certification organization, NSCA, the National Strength and Conditioning Association, invited me to give this talk, and they're flying me out to Colorado Springs to record it in the end of April. And the topic of that talk is something that I'll mention a little bit later in today's podcast too. But that kind of brings us up to today. The first 2 weeks of March were kind of like travel, then unexpected more travel, then recovery from travel, and then just diving into lots of work. So yeah, it makes sense that even though March has been a regular length month, it just feels like it flew by and like April is somehow knocking at our door. And I think partly it feels that way too, because looking ahead, Justin and I had mentioned Japan. Here's a little more on that. Justin and I are looking at heading over to Japan kind of end of April, beginning of May. We're doing it by way of Hawaii, which is really fun. We've never split that flight up before, but this time we're going to go to Hawaii for a few days, enjoy some time there, kind of an early anniversary or just stop over on the way to Japan. And then we'll continue on to Japan and get there, I think, around May 5th. So Feliz Cinco de Mayo in Japan to us. Maybe we'll find a taco in Tokyo. So I think just because that's like, that's the bookend, like this month of travel and work, and then the bookend will be flying to Colorado to record this talk, then getting all packed up to then fly to Japan by way of Hawaii. I'm really looking at like the month of April to get a lot of life and work done and to like set myself up for potentially the next several months, because we will probably be in Japan for quite a while. Why, you might ask? Well, Justin studied abroad in Japan years ago in college. I actually studied in Honduras at the same time. So I speak Spanish. He speaks Japanese. I speak skoshi dake, Nihongo, a little bit of Japanese, but not too much. But we have been back to Japan maybe 12 times in the last decade plus. We lived there for a year from 2019 to 2020 when I was still a teacher. I taught English in Japan. Then the pandemic hit. We moved back to America. I career changed to personal training, worked at a gym, and the rest is kind of history. Started my business when the time felt right. Have been doing that for a couple years now. And then thankfully I've organized my business so that I can do that work from anywhere in the world. I'm not trading time for money anymore, nor do my clients have to do that. So we both have maximal flexibility. We can do our work or our workouts from anywhere in the world with any equipment in any environment. To me, client autonomy is the most important thing, and possibly the most important thing, if I had to guess, for like making fitness sustainable for the long term, is making sure you have as much autonomy and choice and ownership over how you work out as possible. So anyway, that's the business. That's a little update on life. But that will be great, because then when we go to Japan this time around, we've decided after years and years of travel there that we want a home base there. even more than the year that we lived there when we were renting. We're now building and purchasing a condo in Japan. So we'll have this ability to kind of split time between Japan and Orlando and go back and forth and just experience all that both places have to offer, which is a lot. We love both places a lot. And I, in particular, am excited for being able to use Japan as a jumping off point to also travel more on that side of the world, since travel has become a bigger and bigger part of my life in this kind of encore career, semi-retired state that I'm enjoying. So when we go this next time in May, we'll be staying till the condo's done and then setting up the condo, which will take some time. So we'll probably be there for minimum 3 months, but maybe longer, maybe four and a half. Our visa will be up to 6 months if we need it, and we'll get to travel all over while we're there, which is really exciting. And we have itineraries for different places that we want to hit up while we're in the country. It will be very hot. That is one way in which Orlando and Japan are similar. That's a little bit of a bummer because, you know, usually the snowbird thing implies you come to Florida when it's warm, which is like the winter. Then you go back maybe to Michigan when it's also warm in the summer. But unfortunately, both Orlando and Japan have just a really swelteringly hot and humid summer. So we can't really escape one for the other. But that's okay. We love Japan. It will be an adventure. Looking forward to that. So that's the update. That's why I think this current moment feels like, ooh, let's get this episode in the can, because possibly by the time I podcast again, I will be in Japan and I will have had to figure out how to do that on the road, maybe from a laptop, from a totally different setup. So apologies in advance if the audio quality is not as on point in the next few episodes, but we'll see what we can get up to. We're going to figure it out. You'll go on the journey with me. We'll be baby giraffes together. All right, that was just a little bit of a life update. But, you know, coming back from the Arnold Classic and that first bodybuilding show, I have found myself thinking quite a bit about how it's really important in life that we reflect on and update our beliefs. And, you know, sometimes those updates can kind of come from the most unexpected places, like a strange encounter in the weight room or even your breakfast plate. So before I dive into those examples a little bit more, I want to talk about something that I ran across in my morning reading the other day. And I believe if I'm pronouncing it right, it's called Bayesian thinking. It might just be Bayesian thinking, but it's spelled B-A-Y-E-S-I-A-N. I'll link to it in the show notes so you get a little overview. But in a nutshell, Bayesian thinking means that we're willing to update what we believe as we get new evidence. So it's kind of like having a mental GPS that recalculates when you get new information, which is logical, right? Like, let's say, take that metaphor, a GPS. Let's say you put into, this is a real example. Let's say you think you put into the Tesla GPS, like your destination, and you think that auto self-driving, full self-driving is driving you to your destination. Maybe it's a Starbucks or whatever. And then as that Starbucks comes up, you can tell the Tesla is just going to blow past it. And you realize, oh no, it like picked up a Starbucks that I used to go to or across town or whatever. So then very quickly, you on your phone navigate to that Starbucks and send that new updated address to the Tesla. The Tesla reroutes, and just in time, it pulls you into the correct Starbucks, disaster averted, caffeine acquired, all is well. Thank God, right? We love technology. We love that we can get new information like an updated address, and we can update our GPS, and we can get to where we're going more efficiently. So then let's take that example and think about, you know, let's say we need a GPS for our health and fitness. And same kind of thing, we want to get there efficiently. We don't want to go across town, metaphorically, to a far away or an old place that we used to go to meet our needs. We want it to be as efficient as possible, as enjoyable as possible, as sustainable as possible. But when it comes to beliefs that feel more deeply personal, like again, maybe your fitness routine or maybe your choices around food, it's not as easy to just kind of switch up your gear. It's not like, oh, new Starbucks, new address, change it up. There we are. Ding, nailed it. These beliefs can be wrapped up in our identity at times, or maybe in even some fear or shame or just comfort from having believed these things for a long time. And shifting them can take a lot of curiosity, sometimes a lot of intention, and definitely a little bit of courage. So I want to walk back to some of those examples I hinted at a minute ago, a gym moment where I realized maybe not every interruption from a man is what it seems. Maybe an experience that I had about bodybuilding following the Arnold. I also want to talk about that talk that I'm going to give to trainers. And I forget if I already mentioned it, but if not, and I'll get into more of this soon. But the topic is, going back to a GPS metaphor for a minute, a GPS for kind of for trainers for the GLP-1 era. And, you know, I'll get into this more like I mentioned, but basically the idea is maybe taking judgment out and bringing curiosity in when it comes to working with clients who may be thinking of or currently using or even discontinuing use of a GLP-1 and what our role as trainers might be in that situation. Even a little lighthearted example about going from fearing a food to recognizing that context and actually maybe even just digestion is what matters most. So as I walk through these examples, I invite you to also reflect as I share my examples and my experiences. What is one belief that you might also personally hold? But really, if you reflect on it a bit, you might be ready to revisit. Is there a story that you hold on to just because it's familiar, even if new evidence has nudged you or is continually nudging you to get curious and maybe reconsider? And just a reminder, when it comes to all of these things, whether it's general fitness or specifically building strength, you can check out my Build with Becky program. It has lots of things that help you update maybe prior beliefs and integrate new ways of thinking about your health and fitness journey that maybe take out again a lot of the judgment and add in a lot of curiosity. So thanks for listening. And just remember that your beliefs are allowed to grow and change right alongside you. So let's get into those examples. Okay, first up, this was maybe the most impactful one. So I'll start there just because it really kind of stopped me in my tracks. And this was after I'd been thinking about this topic for the podcast for a couple weeks. And then this one came out of nowhere. So the other day I was at the gym, mid-lift, had my AirPods in, very focused. And I think I might have even been not even between sets, but between like it was a single-sided movement and I had done the left side and I was about to do the right side. And this guy kind of like seemingly interrupted me, definitely made eye contact, was talking. I had noise cancellation on, so I didn't really hear him. And, you know, in my mind, I'm just like, ugh, yeah, he's going to like mansplain to me about how I'm doing this wrong or interrupt me or something. I don't know. But I take an AirPod out and I realize as I do so, and he continues talking to me, that he's actually asking me to spot his max bench press attempt. And at first I kind of almost like mentally like point to myself, look around and I'm like, me? Are you asking me to spot you? But then I kind of immediately just put that to the side and I'm like, heck yeah, I'll spot you. Let's do this. And I see what he has on the bar. He's got two 45 pound plates on either side of the bar, which is 90 pounds per side plus the 45 pound barbell. I could be doing my math wrong, but I think that is 180 plus 45, 225, 225 pound bench press. And he's like, okay, I think I have 2 to 3 reps. And I'm like, all right, let's go. And I know from spotting my male clients in the gym, when you are spotting, you don't need to be able to like barbell bicep curl 225 pounds to spot. You just need to be able to give like a little bit of help up and then they're fine and they can rack it. So I know it's actually completely safe. And I'm actually like, oh my gosh, a man asked a woman to spot him, and like a relatively heavy lift and a relatively like comparatively small woman. But, and I don't, who knows what was behind his thought of asking me versus somebody else. But it just was so refreshing to realize he was not going to mansplain anything to me. He truly just wanted a spot. I was the closest person to him. And he probably, if I had to guess, looked around and was like, this person kind of looks like she knows what she's doing compared to some other people around me. And so really, like, going back to my former belief of like men are generally going to interrupt or bother you at the gym, I realized, or men are also trying to get their workout in and occasionally are also pushing themselves as hard as you are and want a little support in that journey. And that actually felt so much better to have that thought and to have that realization. And it was just a really nice moment to realize that not every interruption is what it seems. And another example of a gym moment that I had, kind of a more typical, I would say, gendered situation, but still one that helped me step back and not assume so much. I was doing a very heavy dumbbell RDL, a Romanian deadlift, like heavy enough that just getting the dumbbells out and putting them away is like harder than the deadlift because they're like 90 pound dumbbells or 95 pound dumbbells. So you're like lifting 100 pounds with one hand to like move half of the weight you'll be moving in the lift out. Anyway, post doing the movement, I'm, you know, using both hands to pick up one dumbbell and put it back. And it's like taking all of my strength. And then I turn around to go get the second dumbbell. And there's a man at my bench. And, you know, again, in my mind, I'm like, oh, he's like taking my bench. I'm not done. I need to like clarify to him that I'm still using the equipment. And then I realize same thing. He kind of looks at me and motions over like, can I re-rack this for you? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Because for him, it's relatively easy to pick that up and re-rack it. Whereas for me, it's like almost a whole nother deadlift to do that. So again, just a good refreshing reframe that not everything is as it seems. And, you know, I think sometimes a setting in particular can prime us to feel like it is, but it's not necessarily. So another example that relates to my own fitness journey was following the Arnold. I have, you know, several friends that are interested in my fitness journey. Some are clients, some are not. And one was kind of curiously asking about certain things, like, for example, why would some of the bodybuilders cover their back with like hair extensions when they're probably so ripped? Why don't we get to see their back? So I was explaining how like different divisions have different criteria. And for example, the wellness division is all about glutes and hamstrings and lower body in particular. So upper body is kind of just covered to not be a distraction. But then maybe like the physique category and the female bodybuilding category is all about full body strength. So they move their hair to the side to display the back, that kind of thing. But regardless, as I shared some of these images of the different divisions, just to clarify that, I noticed that some people had a pretty visceral reaction to seeing these physiques, which I think is completely natural, if I'm being honest. I think most members of the general population looking at bodybuilders are probably like, whoa, that is a very muscular person, particularly like the higher divisions that are more hypermuscular, like female bodybuilding, physique, maybe even figure to some extent. And then it gets a little bit more, I don't know if I'd say balanced, but just a little bit different looking with wellness and in particular bikini and now like the newest division that I'm interested in, fit model. I think probably is just interpreted as a little bit more traditionally feminine in the way the muscle is displayed and the balance top to bottom and all of that. So anyway, as I'm showing some of these divisions, there are some pretty visceral and I would say probably a little bit judgmental reactions, but I also understand that. And I also am all about body neutrality and body autonomy. So similar to how in my program, I like to give lots of options so that people have complete autonomy and flexibility over their workouts. I also like to apply that mentality to just bodies in general. Like bodies are neutral, meaning like your body's not better or worse if you have more or less muscle tone or a higher or lower body fat percentage, right? Your body's just your body. It's neutral. It doesn't make you a better or a worse person if you're more or less fit. That's body neutrality. At the same time, I very much promote and believe in body autonomy, which is the idea that within your own budget and time and energy and interest level, you have the autonomy to take whatever actions you want to take to potentially influence what your body looks and feels like. So while we can't maybe spot reduce body fat very effectively, there is actually one new study, side note, that suggests that you may be able to spot reduce a little bit of abdominal fat if it's paired with sprint interval training before abdominal work, and I think fasted sprinting. So that's a little bit of a new thing. I can try to find it and link to it in the show notes if you're interested in. But for the most part, we can't spot reduce body fat, but we can build muscle and we can be in a caloric deficit to systemically lose body fat to uncover that muscle. So if that's something you're interested in doing, you have the motivation to do it and the drive and the interest in doing it, maybe the budget for a coach to support you with your adherence, by all means, you're allowed to do that. Just like if you have the budget, energy, time, and interest, you're allowed to go buy a new wardrobe to display your body in a different way. And that also, just because you have nicer clothes or higher end clothes, that doesn't make you a better or a worse person, right? So it's, you can see that metaphor in a lot of ways, I think. But I also think that because bodies are so, you know, personal and visceral, and we live in our bodies and they're our vehicle to experience everything about the world, I think it can be harder to apply that neutrality and autonomy to bodies, and in particular, maybe to bodies that we see that might, I don't know if I'd say trigger us, but maybe like make us a little bit more aware of our own bodies than we're comfortable with. And I think that's completely fair. You know, when I think of my own journey, I have gone through so many seasons in my body. You know, for years, I was kind of in this body that I didn't treat very well. And I restricted the things I ate and I moved more than was recommendable and not in ways that were very efficient or evidence-based because I didn't know better. So I just was kind of thinking more is better with movement and less is better with eating. And that was a lot of my life as a person socialized as a female to be like small and attractive. And then once I became a trainer, I learned to build muscle. I learned to embrace getting strong over a certain aesthetic. And that felt really good. And I also didn't want to put on my clients any pressures around food or body image that were not evidence-based. So I went through a long phase of intuitive eating, mindful eating, and essentially not weighing myself, not weighing my food, not tracking anything, and just kind of unlearning some of those unhelpful things. And then I kind of came out the other side of that and I got my nutrition certification and I realized, you know, it's probably not like an all or nothing, like I need to restrict and control every last thing about my movement and food, or I need to completely let everything just be intuitive and mindful and whatever feels right in the moment. There's probably some kind of balance here, or at least some kind of different tools can be utilized for different seasons and different intentions and different purposes. And so starting after I got my nutrition certification, I went through again a few different seasons of first just kind of learning a lot of strategies, like, for example, broader things like eating to 80% full or waiting 20 minutes before I had a second serving to see if I was truly still physiologically hungry or just kind of in the mood to eat because I was appetized, those kinds of things. And that slowly led into a fat loss phase where I did eventually go back to tracking some macros again. And then once I had done that for about a year and was really happy with those results and started getting interested in bodybuilding, that led into finding and working with my coach, Alexa. So from there, we've actually reversed all of that and we've added up to more than 600 calories a day. And I went from almost being low carb again to now at times eating over 300 carbs a day. And this has all led to putting on muscle and a growth season to build that muscle so that maybe in a year or so, if I'm interested, we can do another fat loss phase, reveal that muscle and get on stage. So basically what all of that to say, I have a couple examples I'll share that kind of tie into all that bodybuilding journey, but when I look at other people's physiques, no matter what kind of like emotion they trigger in me, I'm learning to look at different physiques and not see them as like a black and white thing, like that's good or that's bad or that's too much or that's not feminine or whatever it might be, but more so just to see, okay, these are different targets. These are different criteria. These are different endpoints and goals that necessitate, I mean, frankly, probably different genetics as a starting point. Bodybuilding is a very subjective sport. So it probably is smart to pick a category or a division that aligns with where you genetically easily build muscle or not. Like if you hold a lot of mass in your glutes and hamstrings, the wellness division is great for you. But if you're more upper body focused, then you probably don't want to do the wellness division that prioritizes lower body. You know what I mean? So there's that. But there's also the training and like the fact that let's say you want to walk around like kind of looking like a gymnast and having that physique. You might want to do the fitness division because that division requires you to do a gymnastics routine and you'll have to be strong enough to do that routine. So you need to train in a way that gets you strong enough to do a gymnastics routine. So, you know, again, going back to the physiques I see, I don't think it's so much about judging the physique as good or bad or attractive or not. The physique is neutral. It's more about what training interests you. And what body do you want to walk around in life? Because your genetics and your training will influence that to a large degree. And that, again, is not like good or bad. That's neutral. But it's just kind of having the awareness of what you're doing. And I would argue, by the way, just a little side note, that if you're doing anything that's like just kind of something you found on Instagram, there's very likely some amount of bodybuilding style hypertrophy based training going on in whatever you're doing. And that you would have to like intentionally go look for something else. Otherwise, that's also something that's a little bit special about Build with Becky is it kind of is, it's very eclectic in that the warmups are a lot of different things, but often you'll do something like some weightlifting, capital W, one word, like Olympic weightlifting in the warmup. So something like a snatch or a clean and press, maybe a clean and jerk with different mobility woven in between. Then you'll get your squat, hinge, push, pull, major lifts, compound lifts that give you a lot of bang for your buck and you'll learn to progressively overload them. And then there'll usually be some kind of finisher at the end that is more of like a higher rep superset that's more aesthetic focused, maybe something for the glutes or the core or the arms and the shoulders. And that's more of a bodybuilding focus. And I do that by design so that you get a little bit of everything. You get weightlifting, you get, you know, the lifts from powerlifting, the deadlift, the bench, the squat, but we also are going to pull because that's so important for just function and longevity. And then, you know, most people do care a little bit about the aesthetic. So I'll put that in there as an option for people. And I do that very intentionally and by design, But not every program has that, and not everybody really knows what they're doing in the gym. So I like to be really transparent about that since I started as a teacher. I like my clients to understand what they're doing and why, and I like to kind of like teach a man to fish so that they can do it for themselves, for life. So anyway, going back to what my point is here, I think a lot of people, when they see a bodybuilding physique, especially like, let's say the more hypermuscular, the physique division, the female bodybuilding division, they have a kind of like knee-jerk reaction. That's not feminine. That's too muscular. That's bad, maybe. That must be steroids, which could be. Let's be honest. There's a lot of that. But what I see instead these days, or what I'm learning to see, is options and diversity and different ways to train and different goals that you might find interesting or engaging. And everybody has the autonomy to choose anything that they like in a physique. And if they have the time, energy, money, resources to develop that physique and it brings them joy to do so, I don't really see why I should judge it. You know, I think that's anybody's choice. And it in and of itself is neutral. It's just our thoughts and feelings about it that sometimes are not. So when I think of my own experience with bodybuilding, I guess what I've come around to is, like, you know, bodybuilding is very aesthetics focused. Of course, it's very subjective, and there are some problematic things about it. Absolutely. And it can be, you know, pretty patriarchal. And I think that can be a hang up for a lot of women of like, wow, this just is like assessing female bodies lined up next to each other and usually male judges, and you have to wear heels and a bikini, and it just seems very objectifying. And all of those things can be true. And at the same time, it can be true that bodybuilding in and of itself is just a tool and a sport that you can utilize any way you choose to utilize it. So for me personally, I could have done anything. You know, I could have done Olympic lifting. I could have done powerlifting. Frankly, and you know, this might feel a little hypocritical, but I think I'm really making the same point in both directions here. Frankly, when I look at the physiques of Olympic powerlifters Olympic lifters and powerlifters, I don't want to walk around the world in that physique. That physique doesn't appeal to just what I enjoy aesthetically on my own body. And while that may sound judgmental, I'm not judging their physiques and their desire and choice and autonomy to choose to train that way. I'm just saying, I personally, while I like some of those movements and I like to incorporate those movements into my training, I don't want to do that at the exclusion of everything else and then feel like I don't love the body I'm walking around in day to day, if that makes sense. And I think the same thing, that same mindset of, you know, freedom to choose what you want for any reason, for any outcome, should also be given to bodybuilders. I think often bodybuilding is judged more harshly because it is aesthetically focused. But I would actually argue that in some ways, maybe bodybuilding is actually, I don't know if I'd say the hardest of all of the camps of fitness, because I don't think there's much value in saying what's hardest, but I do think that there's something really interesting about being able to take pieces from powerlifting, from weightlifting, from hypertrophy-based and aesthetics-based and functional-based training, and put it all together in a way where you see the body as the canvas and you're literally chiseling a physique as a work of art. Like, to end up being both strong and, in my mind, some of what I see is beautiful, depending on, again, the division that you find attractive, that you select, I think that's a really interesting thing to be able to do with the body. And are there problematic or potentially addictive or potentially unsustainable aspects about it from time to time? Sure, absolutely. And people can do anything with any tool in a sustainable or an unsustainable way. So, you know, when I think of bodybuilding personally, I am so interested in it because I want to build as much muscle as possible in the next few years as I head into perimenopause to shore up my lean muscle mass, my bone density, my functional longevity in the years to come. And I want to keep a really close eye on things like my body fat percentage, my lean muscle mass, my mobility, how my sleep is, how my recovery and stress are, what my cycles are looking like. And I could do that in a number of ways, but bodybuilding is a really useful vehicle for doing that because you do keep track of all of that biometric data from week to week. So if I enjoy it, I enjoy the outcome, aka the body results. And that's kind of up to me what I enjoy in that regard. And it's a useful vehicle for continued lifelong learning. For me, that's like a complete green light, full steam ahead. And I'd completely understand if it's not for someone else. Like maybe someone else is in the phase of their journey that I was in a few years ago where they need to be unlearning the things that are feeling sticky to them. And maybe the things that are feeling sticky are tracking their food or restricting or feeling too tied to body metrics. It's okay to be wherever you are in life. Where I think it sometimes doesn't feel okay is when we judge others' choices and their journeys and where they are as like just kind of discreetly good or bad, all or nothing, etc. I think there's a lot more nuance there than we like to give it. And to get a little bit out of this like bigger picture and into a more concrete example, this last month with Build with Becky was the annual greens challenge that we always do in March, just kind of with St. Patty's Day. It's a good reminder of green things all around. So we try to eat as many greens as possible and maybe even eat the rainbow, all the colors, to get as many micronutrients and fiber in as possible. And I have personally, because of eating so many more carbs, I've been eating bagels lately. And it was funny, I posted this like beautiful bagel sandwich with all the veggies on it and all the colors. And I just, in passing to some of the BWB friends and clients I shared it with, said something like, man, like this is an example of how things have changed for me. When I was keto or low carb, I actively avoided bagels, maybe even kind of saw them as like a fear food, like a dangerous food that I should avoid. And now I have like several bagels a week. Like one day last week, I had two bagels to hit my carb macro. And that just reminded me too of something while I was learning to eat more carbs and I was sometimes struggling with it. My coach Alexa reminded me gently, you know, the only food that is like a quote unquote bad food is the food that you don't digest well or the food that you're allergic to. And like, yes, of course, foods have different macro and micro content and are maybe not like numerically the same amount of healthy or whatever, but we can make them morally equivalent. And in fact, sometimes just simple carbs are exactly what the body needs to grow if that's the goal. So think about your goal, think about what you're doing, make sure that the two are aligned. But other than that, the bagel itself is not good or bad. I can revisit that belief about a bagel being bad or dangerous or something to avoid. And I can realize just like bodybuilding's just a tool and it's how you use it that could make it maybe addictive or unhealthy versus a tool for curiosity, exploration, and growth. A bagel is just a bagel. It's something that, yes, if you're low carb, it's not going to support your goals, of course, but if you're not low carb, it's just a bagel. And especially if you're doing something like I'm doing right now, it might be an essential tool in the toolkit. So I hope that those examples, just kind of again, zooming out, help you to maybe see you don't have to perpetually believe the same thing. And it's understandable if you've clung to certain beliefs around your body or around food for maybe longer than you needed to, because I think over time, especially like going back to being low carb, I think like that became my whole personality for a minute. And I was kind of a keto evangelist. Like I felt so good eating that way, probably because I had other underlying gut issues at the time and it just kind of helped them feel better. It wasn't the keto. It was like the lack of the other things that I was eating, but I didn't really know that yet. So I would just, you know, sing the praises of eating low carb to everyone who would listen and kind of judge anyone who in my mind didn't have like the fortitude and the, I don't know, like motivation to try it or stick to it or whatever. When really I look back at that now and I realize, okay, keto was a tool and it served me well in that phase of life. But man, oh man, it's not the tool for this phase. And that doesn't even mean that it's bad now. It just means it's a different season and I need to update my prior beliefs about what foods are okay and to realize all foods are okay, actually. It just depends on what the goal is and whether I'm honoring that goal. So going back to you, what beliefs might you have that you don't even realize that they've become your identity, they've become your personality, or at least are very personal? Maybe it's something to do with your fitness routine. Maybe it's something around the food choices you make when you're grocery shopping. Maybe it's even something that you think about a friend or a family member that you want to re-examine in light of new evidence and maybe take a little bit of that judgment out and add a little bit of curiosity in. One last example I want to share that gets into the talk that I'm preparing for trainers is the idea of in this new kind of GLP-1 era, if you're not sure what I'm talking about, like Ozempic, Wegovy, those drugs that help people lose weight, they're called GLP-1s. And there are a lot of them and there are new ones coming out every day that are even more effective. In that era, I think we can all benefit from some of this Bayesian thinking, some of this updating our prior beliefs, because I think that whether we want to admit it or not, just like there is racial bias and there's stigma around various things in our culture, there's definitely weight bias as well. As much as I talk about body neutrality, society is not weight neutral. There are very clear benefits to being at a lower BMI in our society, for better or worse. We may not want to admit that, but that is the truth. I remember, I think it was maybe the day I flew, was it to Columbus or somewhere else, maybe to Cancun? It was like the day that Southwest changed their policy so that if you were over a certain size, you had to buy a second seat. And it was a very contentious update because I think a lot of people who are living life in bigger bodies were specifically feeling safe flying with Southwest because it acknowledged that if there was an extra seat, it was, you know, kind of the compassionate thing to do to just make it available to a person. Whereas now they might literally make that person stay behind, buy two seats, wait for the next flight. So whether we want to admit it or not, society is not weight neutral. And many, many clients and just members of the general population. So clients, if you're a trainer, just other people, if you're a member of the general population, like most of us are, many, many people are considering or curious about taking a GLP-1 to lose weight, or they're taking it, but they're doing it kind of on the DL because they feel shame or stigma surrounding it. Or maybe they've taken it, they've gone off of it, they've experienced rebound weight regain, they've gone back on it. They're somewhere in that journey. Or maybe they're on it and they want to go off of it, but they're afraid of that rebound weight. Regardless of what it is, the talk that I'm creating for trainers is basically to create a little GPS of sorts, a roadmap of sorts of various entry points, all of those that I just discussed, maybe someone who's curious, someone who's considering, someone who's on it, somebody who wants to get off of it or has maybe gone on and off a few times. Knowing where your client is and knowing what medication they're considering or taking or discontinuing is not something for, in my opinion, for a trainer to have a judgmental take on. It's just information that a client comes in with, just like a client might be on thyroid medication, or they might be taking an SSRI for anxiety. You need to know those things because you need to know how it might impact their energy level, or perhaps even how they need to fuel or hydrate or something. And the same thing is true for a GLP-1. You don't need to judge whether or not they are considering or taking or discontinuing that. That's a decision for them and their doctor. Their doctor will advise them, and that is actually the doctor's scope of practice, not the trainer's. But the trainer needs to know about it, and the trainer needs to take it into account in terms of the potential side effects. And of course, as we lose weight, if we're not really careful, it's about 50-50 that we lose a mixture of fat and muscle. So it's really important for trainers to build in education around prioritizing protein in nutrition, because, you know, your appetite really goes down drastically when you're on a GLP-1. So of the very reduced food that you're eating, a lot of it needs to come from protein, because that plus a well-structured strength training program, frankly, like Build with Becky, just putting that out there, something that's progressive in nature that helps you get stronger over time. Those two things put together, protein and strength training, that's the P and the S of my GPS, the G is the GLP-1. That's what's going to help people hold on to muscle while they lose body fat. Again, if they just take a GLP-1, they're going to lose equal parts muscle and body fat. And it's going to happen fast. Like, I saw one study that I'm looking into for my talk that suggested that if someone was on a GLP-1 for, let's say, like 12 to 16 months, they would lose X amount of pounds. Everybody's pumped about that. But what was the composition of those pounds? If they were not strength training, if they were not eating protein, it was about 50-50 muscle and fat. And the muscle in particular equated to something like 20 years worth of muscle lost in about a year and a half. And that's frankly terrifying, going back to the idea of entering perimenopause. If you're going to lose that much muscle that quickly, you are going to have an impact on your function, on your energy, on your bone density, on your longevity. Period. The end. So that is a thing to have, in my opinion, an evidence-backed opinion about. That is something to not judge necessarily, but to make sure a client understands, or to make sure a friend or a family member who's curious about these drugs understands that, one, this drug will work. Absolutely, you will lose weight. It is clinically proven, and if your doctor recommends it, full steam ahead. It will improve your cardiovascular risk. It will lower your blood pressure. Your blood lipid profile will improve. Across the board, everything will improve as you lose weight. And there are, like any drugs, there are other second order, third order side effects that we need to think about. And in this case, especially for women, I would say especially midlife women who are getting into perimenopause, they need to know about how important it is to prioritize protein, especially when their appetite is low. They need to expect the gastrointestinal and GI upset that will occur, and that maybe they need to push their training to a couple days post-injection to accommodate for that. They need to stay hydrated to avoid hypoglycemia, and they need to be strength training so that they keep their muscle as they lose body fat. Those are non-negotiables in my book. And while I have very strong opinions on that, I don't think that it's useful to hold on to the outdated beliefs that, if I'm honest, I probably did have at some point when Ozempic first came out, when I started hearing about these drugs. I'm sure part of me did feel like, maybe not that it's cheating, but that like, it didn't feel completely necessary or fair or something to that tune. Or like maybe people should be able to do it on their own. Something to that tune, if I had to guess, was what my unexamined prior belief was. Where now, with so much new knowledge and information from the talk I'm creating, I have such a different, updated thought about it, knowing how effective these drugs are, knowing how across the board health markers improve, I want people to re-examine their own beliefs about them, especially people who are curious about them themselves, people who are looking for whatever it might be, whether it's weight loss, improved health markers, reversing or managing prediabetes or diabetes. These drugs are effective for those things. And there are some other things that they need to think about in addition, but those things are doable. It's very possible to learn about and prioritize protein. It's very possible to find a program like Build with Becky and consistently show up and work at a hard RPE to preserve your muscle while you take care of your health in other ways. So I think it kind of gets into that idea that our thoughts and feelings are definitely always valid, but they aren't always serving us the best that they can, because sometimes they're a little bit outdated and we need to kind of get out of that all or nothing thinking. And we need to sometimes separate our identity from our strategy. Like maybe we just don't identify as somebody who cares that much about our physical body metrics and we don't want to pay attention to them too much. Completely understandable in theory for that to be part of your identity. However, I think it's worth examining sometimes, does that identity or does that strategy need to be updated? I think you can still be a body neutral, autonomous individual, but you can have a strategy that supports your overall health and well-being that is more productive. And it doesn't have to be a zero-sum thing where one comes at the cost of another. These different tools, whether it's bodybuilding, whether it's a GLP-1, whether it's a bagel, whether it's how a man is acting in the gym towards a woman, these are just neutral things. It's our thoughts and feelings about them and our beliefs about them that make them seem charged in some ways. So when we come to applying Bayesian thinking for our health and how to avoid sticking to these outdated beliefs, I think it's worth asking, not is this right or wrong, but maybe something a little different, like given what I'm seeing and reading and hearing, how should I adjust my confidence? So maybe examining your initial prior belief, and then when new evidence comes in, whether it's from a doctor, from a trainer, from a news article you read, actually wrestling with that new evidence and ideally not doubling down on the prior belief, but updating that belief. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to flip completely. In fact, I would say it's more about just adjusting little by little and being more flexible and less reactive to single events, so that over time we just have a little bit less of this black and white thinking, particularly in my mind around things to do with our diet, our weight, our body, and we can be a little bit less dogmatic in our thinking and our behavior. If you're still with me, thanks for being here. Let's just take a deep breath in through the nose and out the mouth. And I just invite you, like I did earlier this episode, just like I walked through a few examples here and shared my experiences lately and how I'm revisiting them, as I close out today, I invite you to do the same exact thing. Reflect for a minute on your own journey, whether it's with your health, your fitness, your relationship with food, something else entirely, and just check in with yourself. Is there new evidence that keeps knocking at the door and asking you to be curious? And if so, is it time to take a closer look? I invite you to do that now or at any time, remembering that just because you have a belief does not mean that you're not allowed to update it. Your beliefs are allowed to grow and change right along with you. Thanks so much for being here. Check out the show notes for any of the resources I mentioned in this episode. And until next time, thank you so much for joining me on this journey to a stronger self and a better life. See you next time.